this week's sportscaster, Helene Elliott from the Los Angeles Times, but she's actually on the other side of the Americas. She's in Florida. Kia ora, Helene. Welcome back to Nights.
Lovely to speak with you. How are you?
I'm very well. Helene, I'm rather impressed because you are 8 hours ahead of us, but a day behind. So by my calculations, it's coming up to 5:15 on Monday morning, right?
Or correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you in Florida for a game?
No, actually for some family business, but then I'll be going to the U.S. Olympic gymnastics trials in St. Louis in a few days to watch Simone Biles and all the people tumbling and doing things on balance beam and all that.
Is there still excitement about these Olympic Games, Helene?
You know, it's funny because for such a long time there's been such a cloud over them, and there still is to a degree. But yesterday I was watching the U.S. Olympic track and field trials, what you call athletics trials. And you hear stories again about athletes who have overcome terrible injuries or personal family situations to perform so well. And you start to get caught up in that again, that, you know, maybe the Olympics are going to be different. They're going to be unlike any Olympics we've seen in that, you know, there's probably not going to be very many fans, if any. And there's going to be such restrictions on them. But, you know, at their essence, the idea of the Olympics is just so pure that, and I think enough people still believe in it, that this could be a very good Olympics and very inspiring in a different kind of way.
Summer in the U.S. kicking off, and I got this text from a listener. I know some parts of the country have been getting a heat wave. Some parts of California, it's in the 50s, or at least this texter reckons it is. Maybe they're texting from Death Valley.
Could be, yeah. But it's true, we've had a drought for a long time in California, and there's been some very intense heat in California and Arizona. They've been setting records in Arizona, in Nevada. Ice hockey, the National Hockey League, is in its semifinal stage, and the team in Las Vegas is one of the teams. And every day they kind of post these signs of, hey, it's 115 degrees outside, but you know it's still cold enough to have ice inside.
You've told us this before, but I've got to ask you once again now, Helene, for those who didn't hear that conversation, how do you manage to have an ice hockey rink in Las Vegas when it's, well, that's 40 degree heat Celsius outside? It's a big fridge you got there, right?
Oh, that's exactly it. The refrigeration equipment is so sophisticated. It's amazing what they can do. They built a hockey rink in the middle of Dodger Stadium about 5 years ago or so. And outdoors, they played a hockey game outdoors in Los Angeles, and the ice was fine. The equipment is so sophisticated that they can do that now. And, they try very hard to keep the doors to the arenas closed, you know, so that they don't let in the hot air. But they've got it down to a science now. It's really amazing.
What time of year was that game played outdoors?
That was in January or February, if I recall.
Okay, so it was the Northern Hemisphere winter. It wasn't the height of the Los Angeles summer.
Correct, yeah. You know, it still never really gets that cold in Los Angeles in the wintertime.
No. How long has Las Vegas had a team in the NHL League, the National Hockey League?
About 3 years, and it's just been so much fun because, they just embrace that reputation and the identity of Las Vegas as a crazy place. I mean, their shows, the entertainment, they get these incredible high-caliber singers and bands playing during the intermissions, during the intervals. And it's just such an incredible atmosphere. You know, there's Elvis is there, of course. Well, one Elvis at every game. And it's just fun. And I think some people were skeptical and were saying, hey, you know, this isn't really hockey, but all sport is entertainment, and they're entertaining people. People love it.
I mean, who are the teams to beat? Who's still left in the league this year?
Right now, Vegas is playing Montreal. And it's kind of an interesting contrast because
the Montreal Canadiens are the oldest team in the NHL, and they have all this wonderful tradition. Their club is over 100 years old, and they have all these great players who played for them. And here's upstart Las Vegas that's kind of defying all the conventions and being brash and young and having all this fun entertainment stuff. So it's been kind of an interesting series among the fans, too. People who are saying, oh, no, you're an upstart. Vegas shouldn't be in the league. And Vegas saying, well, you know what? We've done pretty well. What have you done lately? So that's been fun. And the other semifinal is between Tampa Bay, which won the Stanley Cup last season, and the New York Islanders. And that's been fun as well. It's been some very close games. You know, we're still not on what we would used to call normal schedules here. By now, usually the hockey season would have ended. But and they're hoping that next season can go back to a regular kind of schedule.
Tampa Bay, is that Tampa, Florida Bay?
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
So again, we've got a team from about as far away as you can get from the Arctic Circle. When the Tampa Bay, have they been in the Ice Hockey League for a while?
Yeah, they have, and they've won the Stanley Cup a few times. They have a very loyal fan base as well. I know you don't think of ice hockey and Tampa Bay being compatible, but they're terrific sports fans down there, and they've come to enjoy hockey, and it's been an interesting strategy on the part of the National Hockey League to bring the sport to cities where hockey isn't traditional and isn't the first sport you would think of playing or watching. And they've done a pretty good job of, you know, getting kids involved. And eventually those kids grow up and they want to go to games and they pay for tickets and they take their kids. And we've seen that certainly in Los Angeles, and Dallas has a team that does very well. So it's been an interesting evolution over the decades.
I want to ask you about tennis now. I know Naomi Osaka plays under the Japanese flag, but she's got strong US connections. And she spoke out about Black Lives Matter last year. And she didn't really withdraw, or did she? I mean, she said, I don't want to do any more of these media conferences. And I can't remember then whether the organizer of the French Open said, right, well, you're not meeting your obligations, you're out, or whether she just withdrew. But either way, she was not knocked out of the competition by another player. What's been the response? Because I haven't asked anyone in the States about the response there to the stand she took, which was really, I don't want to be putting myself under too much mental health pressure going to these media conferences.
It's been interesting, and it's been a very very loud debate, actually, because there are people who say that, you know what, she shouldn't have to do that. You know, if she has mental health issues, if it's stressful for her, she doesn't owe anybody anything. She shouldn't have to do it. And then there are others who are saying, you know what, promoting the sport and doing those interviews, that's part of the job. You know, sometimes you just have to do things that you don't like when you're an adult and, you know, you're living in the world and you sometimes have to do things you don't want to do. So she should just, you know, suck it up and do it. You know, she withdrew from the French Open and she's also withdrawn from Wimbledon. And that's kind of an interesting ongoing story. The clay courts of the French Open are not her strongest surface, and grass in Wimbledon is not her strongest surface either. She's won four Grand Slam tennis titles, and they were all on hard courts. So far she's scheduled to play in the U.S. Open, and we'll see that. And it has touched off a debate, though, and there's been a number of prominent athletes who have supported her, who have said, you know, the pressure is very intense. Give her a break. Let her get help and find ways to cope.
Yeah, I wonder, like, and I'm interested in your view on this, isn't training and training and training and working on your game until you are one of the best in the world enough? What do you think, Helene?
Well, I think that there is some obligation to promote the sport. You know, I spoke to Billie Jean King, actually, before when all of this broke. And, you know, when women's tennis was first starting out, they needed all the attention they could get. they used to beg people to write stories about them, and they would beg television stations to show their matches, or at least interview them to promote their matches. So I think there is some sense of obligation in that you have to do this for the people who come after you. You know, you do the interviews, you keep the sport prominent, you draw in sponsors, and the people who come after you will get bigger paychecks than you're getting. But I also understand that, you know, the way things are, you know, an athlete has just come off the field of play, and they're emotional. And then all of a sudden they're facing a lot of questions. And, you know, normally we don't, most normal people don't have that. You know, sitting in your office, you're an accountant. You don't have cameras and reporters from around the world asking you, why did you mess up that expense report?
Wouldn't it be quite a funny skit to have the tables turned? I mean, imagine the sports people were interviewing the journalists. Why did you put that double negative in there?
Exactly. Or why didn't you put in the fact that I did something good here, and you're emphasizing the negative and things like that. So it's kind of, I can see both sides of it. Of course, as a journalist, I want the interviews to continue. I think that when they're done well and responsible journalists are asking the questions, you do get insights into athletes. And I think we all realize that athletes and what they overcome and what they do, it can be inspirational. It really can. And I would love to see her get whatever help she needs and then be able to return and face tennis questions.
Now, I've got a couple more questions to ask you, Helene. One is about just the general COVID situation and how much, well, because, I mean, one way of knowing whether things are getting back to normal is whether people can go back to watch games en masse again. What's happening now in your slightly more vaccinated state than last time we spoke with you?
Yeah, in California, things reopened on June the 15th. The crowds are bigger at baseball games now, and the basketball, National Basketball Association, the Clippers are still in the playoffs. They've been able to have a lot of fans. The atmosphere is so different. It's just, and athletes have talked about it too, how much different it is when you get that support from the crowd. Or some athletes have said, you know, if they're booing me, I take that as motivation, you know. So it's been very different. I'm curious to see if we get another wave of COVID coming in any time, whether this will set us back. I hope not, but we'll see.
Finally, Helene, are you aware that there's a final to find the best cricket test-playing nation in the world? It's on in England. It features a team from India, the men's team. This is, we're talking about the best men's team, India, and New Zealand. Were you aware of that?
I have to confess that I was not.
No.
I am ashamed.
No, you don't have to be ashamed.
We don't get cricket news here.
No. But let me tell you something. Now, I think this is a five-day game, all right? The test takes 5 days. They've even got an extra rest day, so because the first day was completely rained out. You can't play cricket in the rain.
No.
And then the next day was mostly rained out. 2 days were kind of, so we're on to day four, I think. And there's a very good chance that we might get through to 6 days and there still isn't a result. Imagine that. I mean, imagine, is there any sport, you know, what's the longest sport you can, probably golf, isn't it, where it takes you, 3 days to get a result in golf in the United States, right?
Right, but it's planned that way, yeah. You know, to me, I'm not convinced that golf is really a sport. I know there are people who will yell at me for that, but there are golf tournaments that are built to go 3 or 4 days. Yeah.
But you're somebody, I mean, ice hockey, it's about as fast moving as cricket is not.
Absolutely true. And, ice hockey, people are surprised, but, you know, you can change on the fly, and people who don't know the game are surprised that players are only out there for maybe 40 seconds at a time before they have to go back to the bench and rest. That's
really?
Like,
is that how quickly the changeover can happen?
Yeah, but they call it changing on the fly. I mean, while the action is going. So you have to coordinate with each other and communicate so that there aren't too many players on the ice, and make sure that everybody knows when they're supposed to come on.
No wonder we can't keep up with ice hockey in this country. I did see one game once in Switzerland. I loved it, but it was a bit like watching Dodgem cars, stock car racing.
Yes, if you're not accustomed to the pace, yeah, I can see where it would be confusing, absolutely.
Yes, and you watching cricket. I'd love to watch a game of cricket with you, Helene, one day, if you ever come to this part of the world.
Absolutely, you got it.
Yeah, you bring a good book, though.
Okay. War and Peace.
Helene, lovely to speak with you again. Thanks so much for either staying up or more hopefully waking up early to speak with us from Florida tonight, or this morning, your time.
Oh, always a pleasure.